There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that...
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, let's go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. The phone number, the same all these years, even in 2026, has not changed. 251-343-0106. That works for a call or a text, 251-343-0106. Plus the FM Talk 106.5 app out there waiting for you like an adoptable puppy out there. It's free if you're a Android user, you go to Google Play. If you're an iOS user, go to the App Store. Either place, look for FM Talk 1065, just our name, no point between the 6 and 5. Download the app, and one of the options you'll have on there is leaving us a talkback message, and we can talk back to you there. All right, as we get started on today's show, a reminder here that we'll get to some local stories later on in the show, but there's so much national going on right now. And with that, I bring in my friend. You read his work in the Tennessean. You listen to the music of Wasted Bacon with that big hit single from Santa Got Deported from over the Christmas holidays. And he's always a fine guest here at FM Talk 106.5. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Cameron Smith. Hey, brother.
Hey, man. Are you going to throw your hat in the ring to run Venezuela? That sounds kind of like a fun gig, right?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I can't confirm it, but there was some word that the plane that Lane Kiffin travels in was seen in Caracas. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the buyout for him is pretty reasonable if you get to run Venezuela. I mean, a lot of, you know, rare earth minerals, oil, I mean, all kinds of fun stuff. Better than LSU by far.
Jimmy Sexton going, okay, here's the deal. We could, Lane is somewhat interested in the job, but we're going to have to see, you know, what this comes with the practice facility. Practice for what? Don't worry about it. The practice facility, what's the salary? What's this going to look like here? And what about recruiting other South American countries? Is he open to do that?
Yeah, Sean, we can joke about it, but I am quite concerned that the campaign ideas of ending forever wars and foreign entanglements just got dumped on its head. I've been watching this closely, regardless of whether you think it is legal to basically get Maduro and prosecute him in the United States. Let's push that question aside for an instance. We're literally running another country by proxy. The Trump administration has been very clear about that. And Congress is just sitting there and has had apparently no role in any sort of decisions about, okay, what are we doing here? How do we incompetently run one country? Now we're going to run two. And I just, even if this is a legal move to get rid of Maduro, I'm not sure it's a smart one.
Okay, in premise, I agree with you. I will say, just to be specific here, we can't be running the country yet since they're busy. The regime is not gone, right? We got Maduro, but all the people that were part of Maduro's club are still there. And actually, I hear they're rounding up anybody, the vans are out, anybody they think might have helped the American effort. They're getting that. I mean, it's straight totalitarian. And, you know, I mean, I don't think we're running the show yet.
Yeah. Yet. Well, I mean, the administration has said, you know, it's basically the FAFO mindset of we are going to tell you what to do and then you will do it. And so the Trump administration is simultaneously saying we're in complete control, but not officially. So it's this, again, weird, nebulous thing. And at the same time, Trump's saying things like, well, they're going to give us $50 million of oil that I get to decide how to use that for the American people and the Venezuelan people. And my response is, under what law? What are we doing? And I think American people need to say, hey, wait a minute. The majority voted for Trump and said, hey, you know, you're our president, you're our guy. But we also voted for Congress, and they're the ones that are closest to us. Where is their say in any of this? And I don't like the age of American imperialism. I don't like flirting with this. I don't like threatening Greenland, which is like threatening a small town in America. It's just got a lot more geography. So the last 48, 72 hours for me have been a head scratcher as to what in the world is going on and where are our elected representatives in Congress.
Well, and I want to get back to Greenland, or as I dubbed it this morning, Operation Snow Job. But first, back to the situation in Venezuela. Like, there's certain parts of this, and the legality is interesting to me as well. I think you can make arguments either way, that here's somebody, and you know, to hear the, I mean, the easiest thing here is just to show Democrats being hypocritical because they were calling for these things before, but Donald Trump did it. And by the way, the Donroe Doctrine, or as I said, the FAFO Doctrine, which might be harder to teach in schools, so let's stick with Donroe Doctrine, is talking about, you know, this element of the Monroe Doctrine, and it's not about Europe coming in, right, back when Monroe Doctrine was set in, but it is about China, and to some degree, you know, other players, but China coming in. We have to do something to flex against it. At the same time, in doing that, I don't believe we should not be the United States. You know, we should figure out a way to do it. I want to move China out. This is not their sphere of influence, even though we tell them they can't have the sphere of influence in the Pacific, but nevertheless, we got to figure out a way to do that without. I don't want American boys and girls down in Venezuela guarding the oil. I've got no appetite for that.
Yeah, and I think there's the fine line for me has been crossed, right? There's a line of you flex power. You show up and you say, look, we are the big dog in the yard and we need you to play ball. And you leverage that to the furthest extent you can while maintaining the rule of law and honestly avoiding the tendency towards empire. You know what empires have in common? They're gone. Because once you start playing defense in a hemisphere of the world, or you start, you know, expanding, it's really hard, and people start resenting you because they're further and further away from the power, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't feel like they've got a say. That's the history as to why empire doesn't last terribly long. And I think what's happening here is we have a feckless Congress. They are doing nothing. They are completely and utterly worthless. My apologies to the members who I like, but they are not. They are saying the president can basically do whatever the president wants whenever he wants, and we're just here to clap. And that, other than Thomas Massey, Rand Paul, a couple of the libertarians, that's ridiculous. That, I don't care about your politics. You should always have elected officials that will call a spade and say, at a minimum, what's the plan here? What are we doing? You told oil companies what you were doing before you told us. And we have a constitutional role here, and we need to have that conversation. And a lot of folks are just like, hey, good job. Maduro's bad. Let's go get Greenland. And it's, what are we doing?
I agree with Maduro's bad. And by the way, too, you know, telling the oil companies instead of Congress, maybe they figured the people in the oil companies were less leaky with information than Congress. But that's a whole other correction we got to do. I want to come back on this and read a text here from Michael. It said, if I understand Cameron correctly, the United States should not do anything. Let other countries colonize and exploit the world, giving themselves control over rare earth minerals and oil, which makes us reliant on these powers. We should sit passively. We should sit by passively. Is that about it?
No, that's not even close to what I said. What I think is really important here is if you want to build alliances, trade relationships, things like that, go ahead. Colonialism is not a great idea here. It just simply isn't, because that's how you expand your reach and ultimately fall. You can look at the Roman Empire and what happened with the Goths there. You can look at the British Empire. I mean, go down the list of it becomes unwieldy, and the America we have now will not support that. Now, I'm not talking about the vote counts and stuff. I'm saying the form of government. If you want to basically say, you know, I kind of like the idea of a monarchy. Congress is kind of terrible. Why don't we get rid of this and go back to a king? I mean, I will literally fight you on that, but that is certainly an option, and that's where you get these ambitions of empire, because you have a monarch or a authoritarian type that can say, you know what, here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to do it, and they're not slowed by Congress. The whole design of our government is to slow an executive, to slow a king, to slow, that's how it was built, was to slow it down and make it more representative of the people of the United States. That's the goal. And so those two are not congruent. You cannot have ambitions of empire and the government that's designed under the Constitution. It just will not work.
You know, if you're looking for the straight populism of this, I think if you polled two things, you polled, are you happy that U.S. forces went in and got Maduro out? I think you would score higher with the American people than the part that truly worries me. And I do understand, obviously, what lines can we cross and how far do we go. But the second one is the one that really gets me, and it's the down-home part of it. If we're going to do this and reset and have regime change, which I know the president said he didn't want to do, but you could say the same regime's still in power. But if we're talking seriously about sending U.S. troops in to secure the oil, like boots on the ground in Venezuela, I think you're not going to get not even a majority. You're not going to get, 25% of American people that think that would be a good idea? I worry. I watch the Overton window move on this stuff so much that I think in 3 months we wake up and go, well, it's a normal thing that we have American troops in Venezuela.
Yeah, and I do not want to be in a situation where the regime that's there, and to be very clear, we've been unclear about this from the get-go, that this is just a drug enforcement operation. That's what we're doing. This is law enforcement. No, well, actually, we're going to stay there until we stabilize things. Well, actually, we recognize somebody else as the legitimate elected president of Venezuela, but the person that's acting president is not that same person. This person is part of the Maduro regime. So there's no clarity, very poor communication. We've got this bellicose rhetoric from Stephen Miller, and it's just unhelpful. My whole point is communicate. Help us understand what's going on, how this is going to happen, because the last thing I want is my boys to be an occupational force in protecting oil for big oil. Are you serious? Because I'm not going to do that.
Now on to the Greenland rhetoric here. And, you know, I talked about it this morning. I was filling in on the morning show. And this is not the first. I mean, it was Seward, you know, after getting Alaska, which I tell everybody there should be a statue to Seward in every state in the United States, let alone Alaska, striking a pretty darn good deal, probably only beaten by the Louisiana Purchase in good deals. But then he went on and went after offer for Greenland from the Danes. And then Truman did the same thing. So for people to say it's unprecedented for President Trump to make this run at Greenland, I would disagree. We've tried this before. I see, and if we could buy it, I have problems because of where we are in debt in this nation. That's a debate. Hey, do we have money for it? If the Danes would sell it, you know, whatever. But this thing that if we don't, we're going to possibly use the military. You lose me there. You really do. I mean, I don't care if it's, I mean, number one, it's a NATO nation. It would blow up NATO. But number two, what are we talking about here? That they're not threatening us.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. When Stephen Miller gets out there and says, nobody's going to intervene if the military seizes Greenland. Like, are you kidding me? That's just an outright threat of saying we can take what we want. And I love strength through soft power. So we have a very strong military, and then that keeps folks in line because they know what we can do. When you start going over to being a bully, and let's be honest, that's a bully thing. Greenland, Denmark, nobody there could stop us. Probably the whole of NATO couldn't stop us.
Right.
But the point is, we should work with our allies in Denmark and Canada to say, you know, we really need to beef up security here. We want to put some military assets here as a defensive measure. Can we come up with a deal to make that work? That makes us stronger. To basically threaten to take it is foolish. It blows up way more than it's worth to us. And I would just love to see even a approach the people of Greenland and all five of them and say, hey, we'd really love for you to be part of the United States. If you want to join us, let us know. Take a vote. Take a referendum. I don't feel like, you know, I believe in self-governance. And so if the people of Greenland say we want to be part of the U.S., then so be it. And we don't have to pay Denmark a dime.
Yeah, and I would say, and I would also go a step further, not relying on any kind of precedent ever set, and going for the five people in Greenland. Yeah, and we'll give each one of you $1 million if you say yes. Well, but just buy off the boats. I'm all for that kind of shenanigans. I'm just not for us flexing some military muscle, whether we win or not. That's like, what are we talking about here? This is, you know, this is kind of, I don't know what Putin does, which, by the way, I think Putin has lost some influence here, not being able to protect Venezuela. But still, I mean, that's Putin kind of stuff. I want thing, I must get thing, I will take.
But this is how you start a war where you're the bad guy.
Yep.
Because when you attack a NATO member nation, or, I mean, we're threatening to do that. Let's be very clear about that. The words and statements that have been out there are very much in the vein of threats. And we're putting it out there to just sort of like, I think we're really beating our chest to be like, look, we're big and strong. Nobody cares how big you are and strong you are versus Greenland. It's a bunch of grass and rocks. So this notion of we're tough is kind of ridiculous here. We look silly. And if you want to go to war with NATO over Greenland, you're an idiot.
Yeah, and people are saying, like, I see one of our texters, Squirrel Vereen, saying the Greenland thing is being exaggerated, and focusing too much on it. It was originally voiced musing. It was originally voices amusing, something that, and listen, Squirrel Vereen, when we talk about buying it, I've been defending Trump the whole time because it's not novel. We've done this before, but it's not just musing now. You've got Stephen Miller, like you said, Cameron, like doubling down on this.
Sean, here's the quote. Nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland. He said that on January 5th. I mean, that's crazy. And we just shouldn't say stuff like that. And the truth is, sometimes things may seem legal even temporarily. The president has broad Article 2 powers, but there's no law for character. And I think that's where we are right now is we just have a lack of character, this sort of cowboy leadership. I'm all for making America strong, giving us the best military tools available. I am not for imperialism. That is not a thing that the United States should pursue.
People want to keep this conversation going with you. How do they find you online?
At D. Cameron Smith on the X Machine. We should have this conversation because it's a serious one.
Very good, and I will check back with you soon. I'm thinking about running some cattle up in Greenland when all the ice melts.
Yeah, they're going to be cold cows.
Yeah, for sure. It's cold creamery. That's what works. All right, there goes Cameron. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:28, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Erica Thomas from 1819 News joins us in just a little bit. Let me try to get some, I am going to get some text read here before we go to the news. Unnamed texter says, go Trump. One sorry corrupt dictator down, five more to go. Fire Dog said, after we made Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Panama all states, I'm opposed to anything, anywhere, and let China and Russia have it all. After we make Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Panama all states, I'm opposed to anything, anywhere, and let China and Russia have it all. Unnamed texter here says, increasingly, we have only one ally. John says, military action could just be a military base agreement on Greenland, but we have a base there, John. Like we already have a presence there. Like the idea. That's why I go through the history. I mean, Seward and Truman and Trump is not doing something unheard of. We've tried to buy Greenland before. Buying it now, I may complain because I don't know. We got to pay our debt down. Stupid thing that I always obsess on, like fiscal responsibility. But we can have a debate. I'm not shocked by the idea of trying to buy it. Yeah, okay. It's just like when we go, or we'll just take it with our military. No. Chris in Orange Beach says, come on, brother, you know what he's going to do. He's going to take the money he makes from the Venezuelan oil and buy Greenland with it. I wonder if he would take that money and prop up the ACA, right? The premiums, the increase here. That might be the sure thing for Republicans in the midterm. If we're not going to talk about standards and conservatism, we're talking about winning. It's the way you win. All right, news coming up next. Be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Looks like I have some investors. Okay, good. My Ben saying, don't cold cows make better ice cream? Scott asking, how much ground you getting? My theory is, if we buy, I'm not, like you heard me, I'm distinctly against us any doing anything militarily here. But if we buy Greenland and we've got this big melting going on in the northern latitudes, buy the land for cheap and then run a bunch of cattle up there. Because we'll have a bunch of new grazing. It's just a thought. Just a thought. All right. Into this melee, we bring our friend Erica Thomas from 1819news.com. And a belated happy birthday to you.
Howdy, Sean. And thank you so much. It was a fabulous birthday. You know why?
Why?
Because I made it. I made it to the age of 41. And I'm so thankful. There was a lot of reasons why I might not have made it here. And so I'm just so very blessed and thankful to the Lord for getting me here.
Well said. Well said. We should all have that kind of appreciation on our birthdays. Well, I'll check you in another 12 years and see how you feel. I feel the same way, though. I mean, you see how you do it.
Yeah.
And I want to point out, too, that you know how to spend your time off. Do some fishing up there with Dad. I was looking at you put some stuff up on Facebook. It's like, good stuff. Like, get a little time back from the holidays, catch some bass.
Yeah, it was funny because me and my parents went to my aunt's house for Christmas Eve, and we all did our little presents and everything, and we got home, and we were sitting on the front porch all drinking our coffee, and I said, it sure is a pretty day today, and my dad looked at me and said, it is, and I said, the wind's barely blowing, and he said, yep, and I said, it's a lot warmer than I thought it would be. He said, do you want to go fishing? And I was out the door. It was the first time, I think, in my life I've ever fished with jewelry on. Because I usually am comfortable going fishing. But I was so out the door so quick that I didn't even take my jewelry off. And I thought when I got out there, I was like, it's kind of weird to cast with bracelets on. I hope I don't lose one. But, you know, by that point it was too late because we went in the little boat, the little John boat, which is my favorite. My dad has, like, the bass boat, and we can go on the big lake. But my favorite thing is pond hopping in the little John boat. So that's what we did. It was a fabulous time. We both caught at least one. I only caught one, but he caught, like, three. And then we missed a lot, but it didn't matter. You know, I could have just been casting into a pond with no fish in it at all, and I would have had the best time because it's those types of moments that I will always take with me. You know, I'm not going to remember, like when I'm on my deathbed, I'm not going to be like, man, I wish I would have done something different on radio, or I wish I would have written a different story than what I did. I'm so thankful that I got that time with my daddy, because it was just, it's what life's for, you know?
All of us dads of daughters out there may be getting a little eye sweats on that. They're like, oh, my gosh, my girl. All right.
So true. Take your daughters fishing, Dad.
Yes.
Take them fishing all the time. And you know, they might go through their phases, but they'll always come back to those memories of things that you did together. And it's very important for fathers to be there for their daughters just as much as the moms.
100%. My daughter, the bigger chance to have a fishing buddy than the son. She was always way, way more into it. I want to check in on this. I know there was a lot of hubbub in your neighborhood, South Baldwin County, politically going on here. There's the with Alabama Forestry bringing people in to talk here. Even Jeff Poore showing up at that thing. And I heard Senator Tuberville candidate for governor, was there as well. What'd you get from that that speech or that conversation?
Yeah, so I covered the second full day, or the first full day, second day of this Alabama Forestry Association's public policy seminar is what it's called. So on Monday morning, and I covered the breakfast that they had because Coach Tuberville was the keynote speaker for that breakfast. It was early, so he got up there and, you know, he just kind of started talking about some of the issues that he's seeing nationwide. He really started out on that wider view of things, you know, colleges and universities. He's saying that they're indoctrination centers. They don't teach anything. We need to make sure that we're looking into that. He went into the fraud with federal dollars like we saw in Minnesota, and he talked about, you know, that's also happening in Alabama. Now, after the event, we kind of went off to the side and had a little press gaggle, and I asked some questions, but we had, I think it was Todd Stacy asked, you know, are you seeing any fraud that's impacting Alabama specifically? Like, do you have any information on that? And he didn't offer any specifics on that, but he said, we have fraud in our state, but we're getting ready to stop it. And as you know, he's running for governor. He's way up on the polls. So he said, you know, when he becomes governor, he's going to make sure that we are looking into what's going on here in Alabama. And his quote was, money that people make needs to stay, more of it needs to stay in your pockets, needs to stay in your business. It doesn't need to be squandered by the federal government. And that's what's happening. So it was interesting to hear from him. And then I asked him about the West Alabama corridor, because as you know, there's some Republicans that are saying Alabama taxpayers should not be on the line for this $730 million project. We should at least ask for some federal dollars. Mm-hmm. He said if he is elected, and I have to say, some people have said this is a negative story on the West Alabama corridor. Well, if you think this is a negative story on the West Alabama corridor, you went into this story reading it with that filter. Because I simply asked him about this and reported what he said. He didn't say anything negative about the project. He said it's very important to have this project. You know, he really is focusing a lot on Mobile, because Mobile is where we have the port, and we need to have ways to transport things from that port to other places in the nation and around Alabama. So he said it's a very important project. He just wishes that some federal dollars would have been used, and if he becomes governor, he will look into that. He's going to review and see what we can do.
Yeah, I think
so. It's not a negative story.
Yeah, no, but it's true. I mean, this is something that's been discussed a lot on this radio station. You know, Tuberville went, but we've been, you know, negative in the fact that this one project, we decided not to go after federal dollars and tie up so much of the LDOT budget. I mean, as we sit down here without the bridge completed, and they don't have money for that. So, come on. Yeah, I'll be negative about it. Not that the coach was, but I am.
Well, I am not an opinion writer. I'm a story writer that writes stories based on fact. So I will say, like, don't come at me with your negative comments about me and my story, because that is not what this was. I'm just here for the people. I'm just here to say what the people say and what their leaders say, you know? And so, I mean, I could write a story about a World War II veteran turning 106, and somebody would say something negative about it. And it's just, like, stop trying to dig and look for some, you know, hidden reason behind every story. There isn't. I just love the state of Alabama, and I love to tell stories around the state of Alabama and inform people about what's going on. That's it.
Yeah, well, just don't read the comments. I mean, just Governor Ivey gets her burner accounts out there and starts posting, you know, crap posting out there. Yeah, it's a tough thing.
Well, I don't know who's responsible, but
it's Governor Ivey on her burner phone.
I don't know.
Give me that burner phone. Let me get. All right. On to more politics here, and covering Mobile County Republican Party event here that had hosted 10 candidates. I know this morning we focused on the sheriff's race, but that wasn't the only people there. Talk to me about what happened. Who was talking?
Yeah, there were a lot of people there. You know, they had the first half of this forum. I think it was in November. maybe before then. I covered that one. And then this time, a lot of the same candidates came back and actually got to speak this time. So we did have the Mobile County Sheriff's race. We had another one that really stood out to me was that Attorney General race. We did not have Jay Mitchell there, but the two other candidates were there. And that was Pamela Casey, and she's the Blount County District Attorney. She's been there for a while. Everybody knows her. She's very open on Facebook. She likes to talk about different cases and tell people what's going on with that. And then the other candidate that was there is Catherine Robertson, and she's been working right alongside Steve Marshall for years, for I think she said 10 years. And so her point was, you know, all the other candidates, when they have questions, they're going to have to go to the AG's office and get answers. And she said, I'm the one that gives them those answers. That was kind of a burn. I was like, ooh, that was a good point. But then Pamela Casey got up there, and she was like, well, and I'm paraphrasing kind of, but not really. She was like, well, at least I don't just sit behind a desk and I actually do stuff. So, I mean, it was like, ooh, okay. You know, I think they're really trying to point out their differences because they both say, you know, they're conservative.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada. I always hear that. I'm glad you go there because
God told me to.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody prayed on it. God told everybody to do it. Everybody's conservative. Okay, cool. I'm down with that. Now tell me how you're better at the job than somebody else. I think that's a regular person question.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the theme I took for this story. I did not go detail what every single candidate said like I usually do. I usually at least paraphrase each candidate. But to me, it was these two races, Mobile County Sheriff's race and then the AG candidates, that really stood out because these candidates do have a lot of things similar. But I wanted to know, and I think the people want to know, what's the difference. I mean, Paul Prine and Paul Birch, they even have the same first name.
Yeah.
You know? Like, what? So what do we do? Like, what? Who do we need to vote for?
That got a little heated, though, right? I mean, in reading, like, that discussion was a little heated.
Kind of the same as the AG race, and that's why I kind of highlighted both of those in the story. I mean, I definitely say go to 1819news.com, find my name, click on it, find the story, because it has a lot more details than I can say on the radio, but this was not like where they were actually discussing things with each other. This was simply a forum. So one got up and they had the same amount of time as the other, just speaking back to back. So they weren't interrupted. You know, they did take questions. Paul Prine didn't have any questions. Paul Birch did. And he just was asked, how is the management of the sheriff's office different than maybe in a police department? Because as most people know, Paul Prine is the former police chief for Mobile. And so that was actually what he started out with when he took the podium. He was like, I'm the fired police chief, you know, and this is why I stood up for what I believed in. I stood up against committing a crime that I was asked to commit, allegedly, I have to say. And, you know, he's filed that lawsuit. So he explained, it's all about integrity for me. And I believe Paul Prine when he says that he has all the integrity. Well, then Paul Birch got up and his comment was, well, to do this job, you kind of have to be able to get along with people. And that was a moment where we were like, what? He said that. but, you know, Paul Birch obviously isn't going to mince words. I mean, he just always says
neither of these guys, and they, you know both of them, neither of them mince words, which might make this pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and it makes it, especially like a forum like that, you have to listen to every word they're saying and say, this is, you have to know what to connect those comments with to say, oh, he's attacking him for this, or, and I hate the word attacking, but you know what I mean, this is a target. He's relating, we need to be able to get along with people, to Paul Prine's lawsuit against his former employer. So, I mean, it's interesting. I think both of them are great. You know, I've talked to both of them. They both have given me a lot of access as far as being transparent with the Mobile Police Department and with the Mobile County Sheriff's Office. So I think they're both great at what they do. They're both great people, as far as I know. And so, I mean, it's an interesting race, but people definitely need to know what's the difference between these two.
Yep, and there's going to be much more of that going forward here going to May 19th. You can read that over at 1819news.com. Just like Erica said, just search for her name, get her stories, or if they want to reach out to you directly, how they find you online.
You can go to X, and I'm at Erica T. News, and you can also email our entire team, news at 1819news.com.
Good stuff, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, you too. God bless.
All right, there goes Erica, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:53, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Grab some text here. By the way, John Sharp's going to join us. After the news here, let's go to scroll back far enough here, and here we go. I think I'm with Butterknife said Fox News is reporting this morning that Chinese and Russian ships are circling Greenland. They're trying to make a case why we need to invade Greenland. Okay. By the way, all this stuff. Don't you know if the late Tom Clancy was alive now, what he'd be writing? I mean, boarding Russian freighters with Venezuelan oil and taking over all that. I mean, this is stuff of, I mean, this is, man, it'd make a good, good book. Probably this is reality, but it'd make a good book. Adam said, Sean, I've always been a supporter of Trump, but he is really scaring me now. I thought the No Kings movement and protests were silly, but Trump, it seems to be acting like one in some ways. B-Dark. How did we acquire Alaska and Hawaii? Well, like I mentioned earlier, so it was called Seward's Folly, right? So this is why I thought it was pivotal to have that meeting with Putin and Trump and have that in Alaska, kind of rub their nose in it. Remember the Russians, the Czars got indebted over their skis, and they sold us Russia. I mean, Russia sold us Alaska. That was Seward, and he was made fun of it. You know, the Secretary of State, William Seward, who did the deal, was made fun of back then, called Seward's Folly. Tell me, B-Dark, do you think this is a good deal? So we paid Russia $7.2 million for Alaska in 1867. It's 2 cents an acre. 7.2, and today's money, that's like, what, $150 million. $150 million for Alaska. So that's how we got... Because, I mean, if you're trying to say this is how, you're going to say the Greenland thing is, it's not, so we bought, I'm not for buying Greenland right now because we don't have any money. But if we had some money, I'd be for buying Greenland. I'm cool with that. But so that's how we got Alaska. The deal, I would say, second only to Louisiana Purchase in awesome deals. And then what else did you ask? How did we acquire Hawaii? Remember, Hawaii was an interesting story. So you had the Americans were involved. It was kind of like a junta, like a military thing, but it was not the United States government. There's a whole interesting history here. You had like business people, and I think they might have been in the pineapple business. I remember bits and parts of this, but I think it's pineapple people that were pineapple companies, and they did an overthrow. Because remember, they had a queen, right? They had a monarchy, kings and queens there of Hawaii. And they did the overthrow. And maybe the United States came to their support, but it was like a private army or something to that effect that did the overthrow. And then they went, because they were Americans, right? Or some of them, I think they were English people too, but American, they went to the United States and said something like, hey, can you give us some protection or something like that? And then it became a territory. Okay, I'll look this stuff up. But I think I'm. It was so we didn't. If you're using this to say it's okay to use military might to take over Greenland, because so at least Alaska, that one doesn't make sense, and I wouldn't really argue that Hawaii is a apples to apples comparison either. Let's see. Fire Dog said, I promised myself I wouldn't cry. Party on, Sean. Yeah, the thing with hearing Erica talk about fishing with her dad. Yeah, that kind of gives you a little bit of eye sweats, doesn't it? Let's see here. All right, update from Ricky. Hadn't heard from Ricky in a while. Dollars will collapse. All hell is coming, Sean. Ricky knows World War III. All right, there you go. Thank you for the update. Haywood says, was Cam stating that the current Congress is feckless? It seems Congress since 2002 has been rather feckless. Yes. Feckless is their middle name, right? And then your friendly neighborhood banker said, Paul Prine claiming the police department was transparent during his tenure is a load of crap. I sat on a grand jury for 2 weeks in October 2023 and was shocked at some of the shady practices I witnessed Prine and the DA take part in. One of the DA's golfing buddies got off on a crime that I've seen people all over the country get jail time for on a regular basis. Well, I might need the rest of that story right there. Your friendly neighborhood banker, that is interesting. Please, send me the deets. We're coming right back.